share them? And thank you, Hillary. And where's our birthday girl? What's your name? Marty? Would you like me to sing you happy birthday? Perfect. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Marty. Happy birthday to you.
We are not a glum lot. Well, thank you, everybody. I'm Debbie Davis, and I am an alcoholic. And I am so delighted to be here, honored to be invited to Girlstock, honored to be at this, like this big love fest, you know, and to be with the women that have been on this panel this weekend has just been awesome. I know my story isn't unique in what I've experienced in here. There's been so many people that have touched my life, the speakers, the people I've known from many years, people when I lived here, I've met around the country, people whose stories we intertwine. It's just been so full, so full. And my tears have just, has been tremendous. The tears of cleansing, the tears of healing, the tears of joy. That's what they are. It's been a long time since I've cried tears of sorrow, hurt, or sadness. These are just, there's no other way for the emotion to come out than through these tears, spiritual tears. And I am so happy to be here. I want to thank Polly again, who's been just a fabulous hostess, and I love you so much. The example that you've set for so many. I want to thank Cheryl for being my, being taking care of us and being a good hostess. And Claire, thank you so much for, we flew out together and we've just had I have the pleasure of sponsoring Claire for many years and got to watch her grow and change in this program. And to watch, just to have a wonderful, more melding of spirits. So what a great fun thing that's been, seeing many friends. And yet I'm asked here to share with you my experience with step 10 and 11. Just so you know, I've been giving this talk since 3:30 this morning. So that's, now we'll see what my heart comes up with, right? This is truly the case of the three-talk story, the one you've been giving for hours, the one you're really given, the one you think you should have given. So we'll see what comes out today. But to get to step 10, I had to do the first 9. I had to clean up the past. It was important for me to make an admission to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And that finally happened on February the 8th, 1976. I've been walking this path with you for 40 years now. It's hard to believe, and it's a kind of a mathematical phenomenon, too, because I'm 40 years sober, and yet I'm only 39 years old. So we're getting younger every day, which is kind of good. But chronologically, I got sober in Minneapolis at 18 years old. I had been visiting AA for 10 months after I had been committed to a treatment program. And after the second relapse, I finally hit a bottom for the first time. And I had finally admitted to my innermost self that first step, that I am powerless over alcohol. And I clearly saw how unmanageable and zero and purposeless and useless my life was. I would go on to, a few years later, even though I sort of like bumbled and fumbled through the steps those first early years, there were moments when I really realized when they were taking effect. And when the second step was really about 2.5 years, when I realized what it meant to me, when I heard a speaker talk about that they were doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And while I could see that in my drinking, I really saw it in the sobriety. And then if I was to get new actions, I need to take different results. I needed to take different actions, and I began doing that. And again, with more active sponsorship and recovery. And then that third step, I never had a problem with God, but I felt that I had abused the privilege to ask for help. I had been one of those deal makers. If you get me out of this, I'll do that. And of course, that my part was always forgotten. And I realized that God doesn't make deals, and He doesn't put conditions on it. But He has a path for me. Do I want to be on it with a flow about it or not? And so one day at a time, I still continue to turn my will and my life over to His care and direction and guidance and so forth. In that four-step inventory, when I took my second four-step was when I knew I had really, really cleaned house. And as I mentioned last night, when I was 6.9 years sober, I surrendered one more time to alcoholism and really crashed and burned physically dry. But this now, I could see the sickness of untreated alcoholism, the behaviors I had been doing for 7 years. And I was so sick and tired. Now, this no longer served me. And it wasn't a big, you know, event that happened. It just all came together and went kapow. And the surrender happened again. And when I took that inventory again, I really saw who I was. And I didn't want to be that person anymore, that user of people, the taker, the selfishness. Now, I'd been in service lots of times and lots of places, but when it came to my life, it was still so extremely selfish. And I made that fifth step, and I started to feel those promises, that freedom. In six, I was like, I am so ready to grow up. It is time. And that's what step six meant to me, is, are you ready to grow up finally? Yeah, I am. I'm sick and tired of making decisions based on 3-year-old emotions. And it's the step that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls, and I'm ready to grow up. And in seven, I got to participate, as it says in the 12 and 12, about humbly asking Him, and yet I need to participate in the contrary action. It's not just about sitting on the couch waiting for it all to poof, go up, be withdrawn like a vacuum cleaner. It was about my participation in doing contrary actions. And in eight, I made that list. I'd made and fumbled and bumbled through some early amends. But this time I went about them and I really cleaned up those old amends. And in nine, I made those amends to the best of my ability. And so for me, it was about cleaning up the past, and 10 was really taking me into the present. And step 10 says I continue to take personal inventory, because I can take yours with no problem. I continue to take my inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And so that, you know, So step 10 and step 11, in the big book they have to me a very clear meaning, and then in the 12 and 12, which I adore and love, they kind of have a different kind of a blurriness in a way. I don't know if they do for you or not, but so I look at the big book as their freshest, most recent experience. And that the 12 and 12, written 15 years later, gave us more of that experience of maturity, doing this, living this. And so what I'm going to mostly refer to is step 10 to me is about keeping the day clean as I go along. And step 11 is how I start, go through, and end my day. So we commonly hear I do a 10th step every night. Maybe it's really an 11th step. I don't care if you call it the 27th step. You know, doesn't matter to me. Review at the end of the day, however you do it, is what is important to me. And so I'm going to talk about keeping the day clean and clear. They say, it's a spiritual, 12 and 12, it's a spiritual axiom. Spiritual axiom. That means a truth that doesn't need proof. That, and you know, many of you know this sentence, that every time, it doesn't say sometimes, every time we or I am disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong, and in italics, with me. Now, then it goes on to say, but what, aren't there any exceptions? No. No. Come on, there's got to be a few. No, there's not. That's the good news and that's the bad news. Why aren't there any exceptions? Don't I have a right? Well, it says because we cannot, and I know I can't, differentiate between justified and unjustified. In the fourth step, the big book calls it real or fancied. Wrongs done to us, real or fancied. Darling, there is no fancied about there. If it happened to me, it's real. It happened by God. There's no fancy. And yet, as I've written that inventory, I saw this go to here, and I saw my involvement go from here to here. And so I've come to believe that statement as I've come to believe everything in our literature because of experience. And so there's something wrong with me. Are there no exceptions? And I find that after that continued inventory, the things I have found is that when all the smoke and justification and all the hard feelings are gone, what it all funnels down to is always the same thing for me, the same statement. If I'm disturbed with you, it's because in my mind, in my rule book, which you don't know about, in my rule book, you are not doing what I want you to do. I mean, just for one time, I'd like to be right. You know, just, that's right, they're not doing, you know. You're not behaving the way I want you to behave, the way I think you should behave, the way I. And when I finally got that and started to see that bottom line of the disturbance within me, you've showed me how to go on and be that accepting of others, of allowing them to just race to the end of the cliff, to do it wrong, to do it backwards, and allow them their journey as you have allowed me, because I am sure my behavior, when looked upon from outside sources, also was very disturbing, and that I wasn't doing what they thought I should do, could do, and ought to do. Absolutely. And yet I was allowed to do my own, burn it down, run it to the end, and hopefully learn the lessons that I get to pass on today. In step 10 and 11 and 12, oftentimes these steps are called the maintenance steps. And that was a phrase that I heard early on too, and I thought, well, yeah, okay, I get that. And the word maintenance is in, you know, our spiritual condition. But about 10 years ago, and this is why I love staying current and teachable and open-minded. One of my teachers, as mentioned over the weekend, Tom I from North Carolina, who many of us love and adore, I overheard him talking with some people about this, and he said, it's really not maintenance, it's about growth. And that caused me to reread with fresh eyes. And this is about continued growth. And it says that, suggests we take personal inventory to continue. It's the word continue is used repeatedly over in here, which is not historical. It's ongoing for me. To set right any new mistakes as I go along. This is where I get keeping my day clean as I go along. And I commence this way of life. I've entered the world of the Spirit. We heard that this weekend. It says now, my next function is to grow. In what directions? In understanding and effectiveness. That statement made me pause often to think, am I growing in understanding? And that for me looks like, you know, again, allowing people their journey, being more willing to listen than talk, being more open-minded, coming from a place of, I may not understand what's going on, but instead of judging it, coming to that conversation level of, help me understand, because I don't. Even to my husband, help me understand how you made that decision or how you made that choice. And it's not grilling them or interrogating. I really want to know, because I'm only coming from my set of eyes and my set of experiences, which is limited. And so help me grow in understanding and effectiveness that there are different shades of blue. And so this allows me to do that. And then effectiveness. That statement helped me in decision making. Because there are many, like many of us, we have this much on our platter. We've grown from plates to platters. We have this much on our platter. Okay? And this much time and ability to do it. I mean, I have said to my husband many times, but I remember the first time I said, I wish I could have seven of me. And without a heartbeat of breath, he said, I don't. I mean, okay. I'm still looking for the clone machine, though. But I've had to start making new decisions of where I spend my time in personal things. I have projects that I enjoy. But again, is it going to benefit anybody else than myself? Will this have any kind of ripple effect? This will do any good for anyone else? An example is, so that doesn't mean that I never take a break. It doesn't mean that. My mini vacations are going to the movies. I love, with a capital L, the movies. And so to not affect a lot of the time I do have with my husband, Kent, I will go to the movies during the afternoon or something during the week if it's my treat. You know, if I play a game with it. If you get these chores done, then you get to go to the movies, you know. It's my two-hour break from the world, the phone, emails. And I come out a better person, I assure you, you know. I'm more spiritually fit to take on the world after I've had my two-hour vacation. And I love everything about it. It just takes me out of the world. And then I come back. Now, that's fine, but the self-indulgence of that would be going to one every single day, at least one every day, which I would love to do, preferably two. that now takes me into a different world of not of selfish, and that would not feel right. So becoming more available by taking some of those things that I can do to just kind of quiet my mind and then come back out into you, that's part of the effectiveness to me that it is. It reminds me it's not an overnight matter and it should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for, which means, again, these things are going to creep up no matter how strong of a program, how connected with God I am, these things are going to keep coming up. And it's part of those defects of character I have. And it says selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when, not if, when these crop up, I've got an action plan. It says, one, I ask God, I petition to my Creator, I ask God at once to remove them. Number two, I discuss them with someone immediately. Number three, I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. And number four, then resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. Because I'll get stuck in that morbid reflection. I'll get stuck in that, you know, I'm the worst, I'm the dead that can't ever, the negative Nellies. I'll get stuck there. But if I'm out there, how can I be of help to you? How's your day going? Call any newcomer and ask them how things are going, and they, you know, they've got it going on, you know. When you hang up, you're so grateful you have your problems, right? Yeah. It reminds me that I've learned to cease fighting anything or anyone. And I don't know if it's because I'm lazy, I've lost ambition, or what, but I find that over the last many years, I stopped trying to kick down brick walls. If it doesn't have a natural flow about it, I mean, I have to put the effort out. I have to make the phone call, or I need to show up for the appointment, or if this is supposed to be my path, the strangest of doors and people, places, and things, like Carla's experience yesterday was sharing last night at massage. Okay, let's just follow the next dot. But if I start running into brick walls, which I have often done in those early years, I knew there was a way around it. I'll find the loose brick. I will bash my head against it to make it loose. I mean, and I just find I don't have the energy to look for the loose bricks anymore. I'm going to find the easier, softer way. What's the flow here? So I don't know if it's age, maturity, or hopefully a little bit of spiritual progress that has allowed me to not spend my energy that way and spend it, because I kind of always feel that if there's roadblocks, there's a reason. There is a reason. And so we've ceased fighting anyone or anything. And then it reminds me to how easy it is to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, our past accomplishments. And that we have a daily reprieve. Reprieve in the dictionary is a delay of the death sentence. Whoa, yeah, I know. That kind of puts a new spin on it, doesn't it? If we kind of use the definition, goes, what, and I'm going to read this first person, what I really have is a daily delay of the death sentence, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Yeah, that kind of amps up the interest for a spiritual condition, doesn't it? Yeah, that sounds pretty attractive. There's been times where that has been very prevalent, that statement in my life. I've believed it. I feel like I honor that. I have a daily reprieve. I ask God every day to relieve me of the bondage of self. I ask every day to help me stay sober still after 40 years. Because I'll tell you, one thing I have found a common denominator in is that Every time I've known somebody who's been in and out relapsing, I have one question. And again, it's just a curiosity question. And it's just curious. The day you picked up that drink, did you ask God to help you stay sober that day? And in 40 years of asking that question, the answer's the same. No. It's my reminder that every day is my daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Asking about that. I was in Atlanta for my first anniversary. I was 26 years sober. Kent and I had been married a year. This was the last of the people, places, and things I wanted him to see and meet. Went to my old home group, Skyland, on Friday night. It was wonderful, exciting. And the next day, we went to a luncheon with a mixed group of people. And when we sat down for lunch, there was pre-poured wine on the table. Now, at 26 years sober, I've been around alcohol. I don't hang around in bars. We choose not to have it in our home and things like that. And usually you're asked, it's not pre-poured, and yet this was. Now, I have been solid around you, I want to say, for the 19 years since I took that inventory and did the steps again at 7. I really feel like I've been on solid recovery ground. Not just staying sober, not drinking, and going to some meetings, but recovery-based ground, three legacy ground, okay? And so I confirmed the beverage, and I just pushed it out of my way, and it just caught me off guard. And that particular event, short story, would light up within me for the next 6 months a chemical, physical craving for drunkenness, okay? Not a mental obsession. It wasn't like it kicked off a mental obsession. If there was a mental obsession, it would stay safe, stay protected. But it was like this imbalance, a chemical imbalance within me. I have never experienced that, felt that before. The only way I can liken it to is like chocolate. And I know many of you probably will identify with this, and that is when you have a craving for chocolate, lemon does not cut it, okay? It just won't. It's like, give me the chocolate and nobody gets hurt. Right? And that's what this was like, this gnawing. And I wasn't going to feed that. And I don't even know how to talk about it to my sponsor, to my friend. I don't even know how to describe it. I've never heard anybody talk about it. I'm afraid to, because I'm thinking of what you're going to think. This must not be working very good for you. I don't even know how to describe what I'm going through, but I'm getting scareder all the time because it's not going away. It's not like a drunk nightmare when we have them. And you wake up and your heart's pounding and you realize, okay, this is my ceiling, you know, and that's my husband, that's great, you know, and the relief that we feel, right? And then your heart starts to come back into your body, and this wasn't going away. And it just circled like a buzzard, just like waiting for me to die, waiting for me to give up or something. And finally, I mean, I don't know what to do. I've micro looked at my life. I've talked to my husband and, you know, do you see me doing anything I should or shouldn't be doing? That I'm blinded to? Let me tell you, if there was something going on, he would not hesitate to say, well, you know, but there wasn't anything. And I talked to my sponsor many times and I said, and I looked at what I've seen take people out. Things like, are you lying, stealing, cheating, doing inappropriate behavior, keeping secrets, stuff I've all done before? No, I'm not. Are you flaking on commitments and sponsorship or sponsoring and meetings? Nothing. And after 6 months of this just hovering around and just scaring me and driving me crazy, and still that my relationship with God from that, again, from 7 years on, had been super grounded, super strong. And this is where I felt at times really that force field of spirit between me and taking a step forward to getting a drink. Had that fear that I was driving home from a meeting one morning and it gripped that I would drink against my will. Like I would go into a Stepford sort of mode, you know, and into a trance. And I called my sponsor. And one of the many reasons to have a sponsor. And I dialed her longhand. Because I want it laser beamed into my head. I tattooed into my brain. I don't speed dialer. I don't voice dialer. I want that. If I'm in a coma, I'll be able to, you know, dialer. And she answered the phone, and her life was busy as all heck at that time. And I told her what was going on, and I am terrified. And I was crying. I was so afraid. And she said something that I've heard before. It was nothing new, but it was perfect. And she said, "Honey, what we have is alcoholism, not alcoholism." Okay? And not that it went poof away, but what happened is that two things came into my mind, and one of them was that we have a daily reprieve, the reminder of that. And because my spiritual condition had been in top form, on constant form, it was, again, that force field that I felt, and that it's a daily, not a weekly, not a monthly, not a, when I remember, not a every AA birthday I re-up for another year. When I wake up, I re-up for another day. And I do know that that is God, that that is the power that I am asking for, is that daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And what action does that look like? Well, it tells me that every day, not Sundays, Thursdays, Fridays, whatever, every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. And how do I do that? It says, I ask myself, how can I best serve you? Your will, not mine, be done. And that these are thoughts that must go with me constantly. Now, if I've gone through the day and I've gone through the day and maybe I've said a little something, maybe I was short with the phone call, or maybe I was a little smart alecky with somebody. I don't like to do that, but every now and then that comes out, right? And they may not have noticed it, but I did. Now, sometimes I can go a whole day and not clean that up. And sometimes I can make that promptly. Promptly has a variation of definitions, right? Yeah. If for some reason I wasn't or did not clean it up, the catch basket for me is the review at night of step 11. That's my catch basket when I review the day. And so in moving on to step 11, to me, it is the most beautiful of prayers that I can say. If I take that step and just personalize it, God, I seek you through prayer and meditation to do what? To improve my conscious contact with you as I have come to understand you. And again, that develops and evolves and changes. I pray only for the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry whatever that is out. That's about as selfless as I can become. As part of my prayer meditation time, I love step 11's simplicity because it gives me the three parts of the day. How to start the day, go through the day, close the day. It's all petitioning to God. It's all going to guidance. It's going for review, help for today, pause through the day, and end the day on review. I turn the light switch on in the morning. I turn it off at night because I want to make sure the end of that day is as clean as possible so that I'm not dragging any garbage into the next day. So that day starts with a white slate, even if it is at 3:30 in the morning, okay? And so I thought I'd just do a little show and tell as to what I do in the morning. Now, if you're looking for some new wave, really cool meditation practices, you're going to have to come back to another meeting. Not here. Not with this speaker. Because I am a really simple design that goes throughout the day. You can ask everyone in this room, what do you do with your prayer and meditation? And everybody will do something different. And that's the really cool thing about it, is because my practices have evolved and shifted and moved in different forms over the years. For the last several years, I start on my knees. It's not a religious thing for me. It's a get my ego in check with who's in charge and it's not me. To have a humility to start my day and close my day on my knees, to keep that in shape, to keep that in practice for myself. And I, good morning, God, and thank you for another sober day and another day that I can serve you. Relieve me of any obsessions I may have, because I don't know about you, but I've never had a good obsession. Okay? I've never had eat more broccoli, Now, and oh, those obsessions take me to the darker light. So relieve me of any of those things, because when I'm in obsession, I am useless. And I know that. Relieve me of any obsessions I may have. And I chat for a little while with him and just have some quiet moments. And then I have some favorite things that I read. And the first thing that I read is a non-conference approved thing, and yet they read it in the beginning because we had no literature, and that it's the Upper Room. And I really enjoy the stories, and they're like AA stories, how they've used Bible verses instead of AA literature they tell their story of a struggle and how they've used something to help them move on. And I just change the words a little bit sometimes. But I start with the Upper Room, and I got into this because my husband's best friend, when he was losing his eyesight, couldn't read his meditation books anymore. And so I called him every morning with his books, and I would read them. And it was so fun to make that connection. So that's part of, again, my connection with him. And then I go to the Daily Reflections book, which I really enjoy, and I mark my days. And today is 14,729. And I mark my days because I am reminding myself that I started off today physically sober. But to be able to have that all day long will take the rest of the things that I do today to end up sober. And starting off with prayer and asking for that help is the way to do that for me. Starting off aware of my physical sobriety, but in order to keep that, the remainder needs to be done. And then I, again, used to read to him the Daily Word, but this Daily Word belonged to a friend of mine, a dear friend, and when she died, we had a whole bunch of grapevines, and I didn't see this because it's the same size as a grapevine. And I took all these grapevines to the home group, and somebody was going through and said, "Oh, I don't think you want this one in here." And I said, "Oh, no, I don't." Because I don't, want to send the mixed message of outside literature on our tables. But this is from... September and October 2009, but I just keep rereading it over and over. This is my 18th time through it. And I mark that because I love the messages and I get new highlights and I get new... Read it. Oh, I absolutely love it. Due to space and the luggage, I didn't bring it, but I read the Grapevine quote of the day, which I can read on my phone while I'm traveling. And then I love ending up with an article from the Grapevine. I was a long time did not subscribe to the Grapevine because I thought when I got it, I had to sit down and read it all at one time. I don't know where I got that. And I overheard, or maybe it's called eavesdropping, but anyway, I overheard someone say that they read an article a day as part of their meditation, and I thought, bingo, great, I'm going to do, that's a great, I cannot tell you how many times I've been moved to tears and laughter and relating to that article on that day of reading the Grapevine. So if you're not a Grapevine subscriber, a little commercial for them, please consider it. It's such a cool magazine. And then, you know, and also I forgot to say, I do say the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer out loud because it backs up everything for me. Well, that's how I start my day. That's how I have that quiet time. It varies in length. Sometimes it's 15, sometimes it's 30 minutes. It depends upon what I get. And then as I go through the day, I pause. I am so grateful for that paragraph. Oh, my God. I pause when agitated or doubtful. I'm rarely doubtful, often agitated. Okay? Yeah. Often agitated. It hasn't got to the point of irritated, but I am agitated. And that pause factor of shut up has saved me from making so many amends. It really has. I found myself stepping into muck I had no business being in based on information I didn't have, assumptions I made. That pause factor is massive. And then when we retire at night, it gives me some questions. And this is the encompassment of this day. Now, living in 11 has a lot of interesting nuances to it, I think, for me. First of all, when I start working with someone, regardless of how long they're sober, I ask them, so tell me about your prayer and meditation. What do you do? I just, you know, curious, what do you do? Most of the time, it's kind of, well, yeah, okay, that figures. I mean, I can see that, right? But you let them tell you first. And so I'll say, let's get started. And for the next 30 days, let's kick back into connecting with God. And I'd like you to read 86, 7, and 8 for the next 30 days, every single day. Let's just kickstart you back into that. And if you find that all of a sudden you're just kind of being numb about it, read it out loud. Read it in first person. Because when I read our literature in first person, it's not meant to be disrespectful, but the whole dynamic connection changes to me. I love doing it with my husband. I love doing prayer and meditation time with my husband. We pray at night when I'm home, when he's home. I love that, to close out my day. On the weekends, usually Fridays or Sundays, we get a chance when, again, we're home together to do that. I really look forward to that. And we spend some extra time on visiting and sharing what we were reading. One of the things, again, this helps remind me is I was reading just the other day something again from the Grapevine from years ago that said, we're always going to have problems, but am I dealing with the same problem I was a year ago? If so, why? Why am I still dealing with this problem a year later? And it's a great question for me. And I'm happy to say in most cases, no. But in some cases, it's like, why does this person keep rotating into my mind? So this is, again, how I can stay current and keep it personal. The parts that step 11 has that I find so touching in the 12 and 12 is there's been times when it's been very, very fragile and my relationship with that higher power needed to be really strong. Sharon mentioned when she went through her divorce and how Clancy stopped her with the hot coffee. Be an example of dignity and grace. You're going to do this with dignity and grace. You can be an example to somebody. Well, she became my example. Because a few years later, I would get married and move to Southern California, and I would go through a divorce. And I've never, during that first 6 months, felt so fragile. I was so, my ego, my pride was so beat up, so knocked around, so, you chump, you dummy, you should have seen, you, lots of things. And how I wanted to just do the drive-by pointing, you know, and I know that a jury of my peers would not have convicted me for a double homicide. I know that, right? And yet, you know, again, when I've got that finger pointing out with that drive-by, I got three pointing back at me. And it was my own inventory I had to take. But for those 6 months, I only talked to my sponsor and my two closest friends about the craziness going on inside, the motions that flip-flop every 50 seconds from this to that and back again. And there was a part in the 12 and 12 that I printed and I put in my wallet so that it was always handy. Because there are going to be, if not right now, times for people where they feel this. And it says, and again, I'm going to do this in first person. I discover that I do receive guidance from my life to just about the extent that I stop making demands upon God to give it to me on order and on my terms. Almost any experienced AA me will tell how my affairs have taken remarkable and unexpected turns for the better as I tried to improve my conscious contact with God. And this is the part that I just held on to so much. I will also report that out of every season of grief or suffering, when the hand of God seemed heavy or even unjust, new resources of courage were uncovered. And that finally, inescapably, the conviction came that God does move in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. And that was so helpful to me. And it was almost like a mantra for such a long time. But what we look at with step 11, to me, 10 and 11, is staying current. Staying in the present. And recently I had an experience that really gave that a new twist, a new look at it. I turned 40 years sober on a Monday, February 8th. Exciting day, fabulous, full of love, full of joy in my heart. Just cannot believe it. And on Wednesday, I went to California, we call H&I hospitals and institutions or corrections. And I went to my panel. And I specifically took this one because it's adolescents and it's in an adolescent psychiatric unit. Now, in 40 years of service hearing about your service, going to all kinds of places. I've been to all kinds of places on 12-step calls and all kinds of places. I have never, ever, ever heard of this happening to anyone I know or even did not know. And so I go to the panel that night, and my partner is over here, and I'm here, and there's openness over here to the hallway, and then the kids are in front of us. Now, a lot of them are an alcoholic, but this panel's been going in for a long time. There are psychiatric patients and in there, and they're troubled. They're troubled. So we're sharing our story about 45 minutes into this, and out of the corner or peripheral of my eye, about 45 degrees, I can see this person moving toward me, this young man. Now, he wasn't a part of the kids, but he was moving towards us. And he's about maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 paces away. And I look up at him, and I said, hello. And I knew something wasn't quite right, but I turned back to the kids and continued talking. Now, I'm seated, and we're how we're supposed to be. We've got the board behind us and so forth. And he keeps approaching me. And I feel him come over, and I saw him go to crouch down. Now, the kids have asked me before, can I give you a hug? But they always ask, and so, of course. And when he came over and he was crouching down, I thought he was going to come and give me a hug. You know, just maybe he's a little medicated or something. He's going to come give me a big old slobbery hug, right? I was mistaken. And he came in, and like a snake bite, he put me in a chokehold, and he threw me to the ground. And had lifted me off the chair and took me to the ground. My arms are pinned. My larynx is being closed. I cannot breathe. There is no air. There's motion and commotion, and I cannot move. I am completely isolated down there. And yet there is a calm that is within me that says, God, I know I'm not going to die on this floor. But you do need to get him off me pretty quick. Okay? Getting a little close here. They finally get him off of me. It took four of them. And when they finally did, of course, I'm like, what in the world? I'm not crying. I'm just, what in the world happened? God, that way, you know, because I have never been involved, victim or perpetrator of any violence. So this was so foreign to me. I was so unprepared for anything like this. We go off into the other room, just kind of gather our wits. My partner was totally shaken. Totally shaken. If it had happened to her, this would have a different ending. We went in the other room. We said, let's pray for him. Okay, yeah, let's do that. So we pray for him and just, you know, God, please help this young man get the help he needs. Because I knew it wasn't personal. I knew it wasn't anything I had done. He just had had a psychotic break. So we talk to the administrator. We leave, and God calls me the next day. Are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. We have a conversation about it. There's no post-traumatic stress, there's no nightmares, there's no anything. But there's been a lot of reflection. And the reflection is, this young man very much had the ability to end my life that day. Very much had the ability to cause harm, lasting damage, harm, hit me, or do a lot of other things. But he did not do that. He perceived me as a threat. His mind saw me as a threat. He was going to protect the group from me. I know me, right? Marilyn. Don't know why. But and what was really kind of weirdo kudo about this, and I thought I misheard it the first time, this young man's name is Kent, which is the same name as my husband. Very, not a common name. But I thought, well, what if that would have been my last day? Was I current? Yeah. Could it have been my last day? Would that have been okay? I had things I wanted to still do. I had an event coming up in 3 weeks, and an event the next day I was very excited about. I had Girl Stock coming up. Yeah. But it made me stop and think. None of us really knows when that day is. Would it have been okay to go? I feel I have a lot of years of service that he's got work for me to do. But if that had been my last day, it would have been okay. And when I really felt that there was no fear about that, it just, again, for me, has had a new change of direction. And so when I look at steps 10 and 11 about keeping it clean, about keeping it current, for me it has a love about it. It has a brightness. It has a spirit about it. And when I go to bed tonight and I say those prayers, and like Amanda had her gratitude list this morning, and sometimes we have a gratitude list and think about all the amazing things that happened to us today. The top thing is going to be my weekend here at Girl Stock. And so I thank you for that. Thanks.
Grab a hand and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Prayer.